Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Mondo Show. Don't tune that dial, they used to say. Well, listen, I have a former DEA in the building. I'm an ex-gang member. A DEA in the building is going to make me nervous. But guess what? We got a message for you. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss this program today. But before I get started, I want to thank you for the opportunity that you give me every single week to come into your homes, to have a conversation with you, or bring you up to date on what's happening around the world. I love politics. I love culture. I love religion. I love family. I love everything that makes the world go around. But the one thing that we cannot stop talking about is the impact on drugs and the impact that drugs is having in the culture today. It used to be an inner city problem. It used to be a subject that, you know, the DARE program was created in order to control the drugs and the industry that really changed the culture in America. But today, those type of drugs have infiltrated mid-America. The most dangerous drug in the world, fentanyl, is the greatest threat facing America today. That's my opinion. That's been my observation when I talk to experts, and it has become what I believe the leading cause of deaths for individuals between the ages of 18 and 45. Behind this crisis is a global criminal enterprise that I was one part of. And if there's ever a regret I have, is to have been a contributor of a distribution of a drug that is killing people, not only in the time that I was growing up as a gang member, but has grown to become an enterprise globally. But listen to this. It used to be an inner city problem, like I told you. But when you have nations like China working with the Mexican drug cartels that is funneling fentanyl into the United States, now we have a problem. Now you better pay attention. Now you better start understanding that it's not an African-American problem. And I continue to mention those type of individuals, meaning our communities, because for so long we have been targeted, but now we know the root of the problem. When you got drugs coming in from Afghanistan, when you got problems coming in and drugs coming in from China, Mexico, now you have to pay attention because it's not an inner city problem. It's a global problem. Listen, this supply chain that is being led by some of the most powerful people is devastating. And the drugs that are devastating has now become a crisis in our nation. And now we are facing this problem and we wake up not realizing that it's affecting our homes. The DEA is taking unprecedented actions to target every link in the fentanyl supply chain. But the challenge remains big. The synthetic opioids like fentanyl are now the most common drugs involving churches, involving hospitals, involving every family, and the overdose deaths in America, not only from young people, which, by the way, they are the most hit big with this problem. Over 70% of overdose deaths are connected to fentanyl here in Missouri. To put it into perspective, just 2 milligrams, an amount smaller than a grain of salt, can be a lethal dose. That's unbelievable. Well, stay tuned, because if you've been affected by fentanyl, if you've been affected by an overdose family member using fentanyl, or maybe not realizing that they got a hold of fentanyl, because now drugs are not the same drugs that I dealt with when I was growing up. My special guest, Brian Townsend. He has spent 28 years serving on the front lines of this fight. He began his career as a police officer in Joplin, Missouri, And after 5 years, he joined the DEA. Oof, I get nervous just saying that name. The DEA, dedicating 23 years to combating the drug trade in the United States. Brian also held a national position at the DEA Training Academy in Quantico. And today, he's an international speaker, trainer, and consultant who is tirelessly working to save lives and educate communities about the fentanyl epidemic. He is the founder of Eagle 6 Training and Only 2MG. Oof, I want to know more about those two organizations. If you want to get a hold of Brian and have him speak, come and train your people. I'm going to put a link on the screen where you can contact him. But I want you to know something more than that. He's a friend. I met him recently. His life impacted me. And I want to welcome you to the program.
Thanks, Mondo. I appreciate it.
How does it feel sitting next to an ex-gang member? Because I know I'm nervous. No, I say that kiddingly. What is it like?
It's great. I mean, look where we are now, right? We've come full circle in our lives and we're doing the same thing. Our mission is to help people and that's a wonderful thing.
Quickly, how did we meet?
We were traveling in the airport and you were actually originally in the wrong seat. And the flight attendant put you right next to me and yeah. We started talking about that and we ended up flying twice together that day and yeah. And we just didn't stop talking. It was a great
moment. When I go into a plane, I put my headphones yeah. on and everybody yeah. does that. They yeah. want the quiet time and it's, I don't want to be bothered. But there was something about you that caught my attention. And I said, you know what? I don't want to put my headphones on. I want to talk yeah. to this guy. And come to find out, you are a former DEA. Yeah. I'm an ex-gang member. I had just finished speaking in a conference in Washington, D.C. Yeah. I think you had just finished speaking at a conference in Washington, D.C. And we met up. And it's not an accident. I don't believe yeah. in accidents anymore. I believe God has a plan and a destination for us and have predestined this moment for you and I to meet. I believe, Brian, that we're going to work together because I have a passion to help people. I have a passion to help police officers. I have a passion to help my own community. But I think there's been a misunderstanding in our communities where a friend of mine used to call it the fear factor, that we both fear each other, yet we have more in common than what we know. Let's start with this. How did you get into the DEA? How did you get into law enforcement? Did you have a traumatic experience that led you there? Or was this something that your family had a tradition in joining?
No, I was the first in my family to go into law enforcement. When I was in high school, I'd made a decision that I wanted to go into law enforcement, specifically the drug enforcement, not necessarily the DEA. I didn't know a whole lot about DEA at the time. And, you know, the internet wasn't really a thing then.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what that path looked like, but I did have an interest. I saw what drugs were doing in my community and I didn't like it. I wanted to be part of the solution. And again, it was a cloudy dream. You know, I didn't know how that would be accomplished. But, and I had, you know, I was young, right? I had other, yeah. you know, you could have told me I was going to be a teacher. I would have been, all right, okay. So, but I had that vision and I went to college, took some criminal justice type classes and really enjoyed it. And then I just decided I'm going to be a police officer.
Wow.
And went to the city of Joplin and they were testing, got hired and never thought in a million years that I would be a police officer. But I realized that was part of my path, my journey to become a DEA special agent. And thankfully, after about 5 years with the city of Joplin, which was a great department, great people, I loved the city of Joplin. But, you know, my dream obviously was the DEA.
And bigger.
And was fortunate enough to get hired and go to the academy and start that career for the next 23 years of my law enforcement career.
Before I get into the DEA situation, what do you feel is the disconnect between police officers and the neighborhood?
We need to be part of the communities. We need the disconnect, as I think is it's one side or another at times, and we need to break those barriers down. And I think we've done a good job nationally to do that, but we have a lot of work to do and continue to do, really.
You and I had an extensive conversation in the plane about this very yeah. subject. And I don't use my platform to talk negative about anybody. I'm not here to bash police officers. I'm not here to bash or cite which one's right and wrong. I think we all have the common sense to know what's right and wrong and what's happening in our neighborhoods. Just because one racist cop doesn't mean you have a bunch of racist cops. But also, we can't pretend like we're angels in the neighborhood either. Because we taunt you guys. We challenge you guys. And we talked about this in the plane, that in the neighborhood, we use our attitude. We use that chip on our shoulder as a survival mode, right? When you hear those words, how do you feel about police officers not understanding how to engage someone in the neighborhood that has that kind of attitude? Because it's already, it gets dangerous immediately. The moment you put that suit on, you don't know if you're going to come back home.
You got to figure out a way to engage people and communicate with them and be effective with them. And sometimes, you know, I know at least from my perspective in law enforcement, sometimes we put that wall, that barrier up in front of us. And sometimes we just have to tear it down ourselves and, you know, and start having these conversations and start building these relationships, because that's where we're going to get work done, is when we build relationships.
When you hear defund the police, man, we can spend a whole hour just talking about that. And I want to make it clear. We need police officers in our neighborhoods. No matter how bad I was in the gang, no matter how incredible the crime was in the gang, in the neighborhood, we still needed the police. We still need, we didn't go out looking for them. Matter of fact, they didn't even come out to our neighborhoods. But at the same time, there's a balance. Today, there's an extreme thinking. Defunding the police, what would that do to our society?
It create lawlessness. I mean, that's, we need someone to enforce our rules, our you know, our laws. It's going to encourage people who want to take advantage of the relaxed security, if you will, to create havoc, to create to do criminal activity, and we need to avoid that.
Listen, I'm going to spend some more time with Brian on Mondo Insider, because I'm going to go in depth of some of the subject matters that we talked about in the plane. I want to get his thoughts about my book. I was so embarrassed. I gave him a copy of my book. If you don't know what to say, just give him your book, you know. But as a former DEA, I want to know what he thought about my story, because it's the story of every kid in the hood. And we were not born to be criminals. We were not born to be destroyers. We were born to be loved. We were born to love. We were born to have hope. But unfortunately, life is not fair. And unfortunately, a lot of us get put into situations that we have to survive. And the outcome is either life in prison, hospital, or ultimately death. That's my crazy life. That's the tres puntos. That's the three dots that we have tattooed. But I want you to know something. Beyond that, there's hope. There's hope. When you want to have the ability to grow and mature, the problem is that the streets never mature. They never grow up. So what happens when men and women grow up or outgrow what doesn't grow? We have a problem. Today, I believe we have an opportunity to change the outcome of our future, the future of our neighborhoods, the future of how we treat one another, and be responsible enough to have these conversations. We don't always have to retaliate and be angry at one another. We can be frustrated, but when you have those conversations, it opens up an ability to have hope for the future. But listen, I want you to go to my website, themondoshow.com, become part of the Mondo Insider, where I'm going to be spending more time with our guests discussing the subject matter of more in depth, because I believe that when you start having these conversations, it opens up a pathway to understand where people are coming from. There's a drug that we all have been affected by. We all know people that have overdosed on fentanyl. If you haven't been affected by fentanyl, if you live long enough, you will. My special guest, if you just tuned in, is a former DEA agent that has spent 23 years of his life combating this drug epidemic that has entered into this nation in so many different capacities. China, Mexico, gangs, drug dealers, drug users are all impacting the future of America. And I read a report that we're losing 300 Americans a day through fentanyl. My special guest, Brian, is doing his part to educate police officers, educate our communities about this drug that is killing Americans every single day. Brian, I only got a few moments left. I want to get into this. What is fentanyl? Because for those that don't understand, what is fentanyl and what is the history of fentanyl?
So fentanyl is a synthetic opioid. It is completely man-made, but it's an opioid. It's designed to mimic medical fentanyl, which is used for pain management or you know, surgery to basically eliminate or reduce pain. But it's synthetic, so again, it's man-made, and it's an opioid, so it found our way into the drug supply through heroin. When we saw an increase in heroin use in the United States, especially around the 2010s, early 2010s, and there's a history to that as well, the drug traffickers needed to increase their supply of heroin, and then they needed to cut it with something because you never give customers 100% raw product. And fentanyl was the perfect cut. It's an opioid. It has the same properties as heroin. So it went into our heroin supply, and then it just started to take over our heroin supply to the point where it's very difficult to find heroin in the United States anymore. And if I were a drug trafficker or worked for the drug cartels, I wouldn't even manufacture heroin anymore because you don't need it. You don't need that plant. You don't need that process. You know, when you have a synthetic drug like fentanyl, it's completely man-made, it's cheaper, it's more potent, and that means my profit margins are higher. So it came into our drug supply via heroin, it took over, and then it got to the pills, and you can't find a pill that doesn't have a counterfeit. It doesn't have to be an opioid, it can be any pill. The big three that we seize in law enforcement still are oxycodone, Adderall, and Xanax, but again, all pills have counterfeits. And then when you look at the counterfeits, we're seeing an increase in fentanyl, methamphetamine, and other, you know, poison, other garbage in our pill supply. And now it's got into our cocaine, in our methamphetamine. And to give you an idea, in 2016, there were about 5,500 instances of law enforcement seizing fentanyl in the United States. By 2020, that number hit over 100,000. By 2022 at 200,000. Mm. It's now the second most seized drug by law enforcement in the United States. And it's estimated that it's now in about 70% of our drug supply. And it's having a devastating impact. You know, my career, I can't think of a drug, there is no drug. It's not that I can't think of it. There is no drug that has had the impact that fentanyl has had. I've never seen a drug more dangerous. And like you said, 300 people a day. I mean, that's about one person every 5-6 minutes who dies from drugs. And the statistic you used for Missouri was accurate. And in fact, that's accurate for the entire United States. About 2/3 of all drug deaths, the government calls them, overdoses, typically, or we call them drug poisonings. About 2/3 of all those deaths throughout the United States, not just Missouri, are because of this one drug. So when I say after almost 3 decades of law enforcement, I've never seen a drug more impactful. Well, there you go. That's why.
How in the world did fentanyl escalate so fast? How widespread is this problem?
It's everywhere. I mean, the unfortunately, the demand for drugs in this country is too big, and we haven't been able to control that. And the drug traffickers will exploit that because at the end of the day, this is about making money, and they have found a way to make a lot of money by putting fentanyl throughout our drug supply. And you think about that. I mean, 40% of all cocaine seized by law enforcement last year had fentanyl in it. 17% of all methamphetamine seized by law enforcement last year had fentanyl in it. And like I said, heroin, good luck if finding heroin. It's difficult. And if you can find it, it's going to have fentanyl in it.
Wow. Yeah. I got to ask you this question. And I had to write them down because I thought about this very carefully. What are some of the most common myths about fentanyl that people need to be aware of, especially regarding its potency and dangers?
I think the biggest myth is that just being around fentanyl will kill you. And we know that's not true. In 2016, that's what we thought in the law enforcement community. And even at DEA, we put that message out to not only law enforcement, but to the public. And we now know that that's not the case. It's a dangerous drug, and obviously we want people to be, take precautions around it, especially first responders. So, wear appropriate PPE, gloves, whatever that is. But we know that in the event that you are around it, if it does puff smoke in the air, if it does get on your hands, it's not gonna kill you. It's not gonna create an overdose. Most folks in law enforcement know that now, but that's still the perception out there that this is such a dangerous drug that just being around it's gonna kill you. Mm-hmm. It's gotta get into your bloodstream. It's gotta get into your body.
Yeah. I got 6 minutes left. I can't believe time has gone by. I wanna give you 4 minutes to look into that camera. Sure. And I want you to share a message to those watching in your passion about the use of fentanyl and the hope that we have that you're working on every time you go out and speak about it.
Well, I'd reiterate that this is a drug that I've never seen do the damage it has. We have kids growing up now who have drugs, a drug in their drug supply that'll kill them the first time they use it. We've never had that. When we were young, if you experiment with drugs, you didn't have to worry about death. And now our kids do. And there's a lot of instances out there of people, especially young people, dying from first-time drug use. In fact, I'd argue that the majority of people that are dying from fentanyl poisoning had no intention of consuming fentanyl. They thought they were getting Percocet, Xanax, cocaine, whatever it is. And they were unwittingly given fentanyl by these drug traffickers who have one thing in mind, making money, and they're dead. This is a problem. This is a national emergency. We are in an illicit fentanyl crisis. The fact that one person is dying from drugs in this country every 5 or 6 minutes should be alarming to you. And this is what keeps me up at night. This is why I started a nonprofit organization to address this particular situation. Talk to people. And that's something I tell all my audiences. Have this conversation. Have it with your kids. I can't tell you how many parents I've talked to who just don't have this conversation with their kids. And I don't understand why. Because I promise you, someone will. And you want them to have accurate information. Teach them how deadly this drug is. I mean, only 2 milligrams. You said this earlier. 2 milligrams is a couple granules of salt or sand. It's not a lot. That gets into your body, it gets into the drugs that you're experimenting with, you're dead. There is no second chance. So please, please have these conversations. Understand how dangerous this drug is and how it's changed casual drug use, drug experimentation, and the drug landscape. This is a problem, and I hope that people look at it as a problem and give it the time it deserves. And educate people. The United States, let me end with this. The United States is about 4% of the world's population of, what do we have, 8 billion people in the world? Yet we have the largest consumption of drugs in the world.
Wow.
That's a problem. So we need to reduce the demand. And that's going to start with having these very difficult at times conversations. Difficult but important conversations.
Former DEA, national or international speaker, soon to be author, I promise. He's going to come back. I know you're going to come back. We got to spend a lot of time talking. We got to fix this problem. We got to resolve this problem. I believe there's hope. Yeah. You are that hope. Listen, I'm going to go right now, but if you want to hear more, we haven't even touched the surface of this conversation just yet. I wanted him to be introduced to you. We got a lot to talk about. And if you want to hear more about the conversation of the drug that is killing 300 Americans a day, I want you to join me right now and sign up to become a Mondo Insider. Go to the website, themondoshow.com. Find out how you can get a hold of Brian. He's got to come and speak to your church. He's got to speak to your conference and your community. Let's save lives. If you care about your children, if you care about your community, if you care about the people you work with, you have to raise up the standard and understand there's a war. Fentanyl has declared war on your family, on our communities. We got to do something about it. We can't just sit around and pretend that it's not going to happen to us. The very least person I thought was going to be impacted by the death of fentanyl happened to one of my good friends last year. He was a businessman, multimillionaire, and decided to go online to buy OxyContin so it can take away the pain of a car accident he had. He took that OxyContin, not realizing that it was laced with fentanyl, and never woke up. That devastated his businesses, his family, his friendship. It devastated all of us. Yet, why are we staying silent about this issue? Human trafficking, drug trafficking are impacting our culture today, and yet the church is silent about this. Yet, religious communities are silent about this. Yet, the church is dealing with the highest epidemic of opioids like we've never seen before. It's time for us to wake up. Listen, I need your help. I want to keep bringing people like Brian to the program and learn more about what we can do to be the answer to the problems that we're facing today. Will you consider joining me on this journey? Partner with me. I need your support. I need you to stand with me. I want to save life. The Bible says this: he who saves life is wise. I want to be wise. I need your help today. If you can donate $100, if you can donate $50, if you can donate $10,000, help me bring a solution to this problem. I'm going to figure out how I can partner with Brian and his organization because I want to be a part of the solution. I know you do too. Stand with me. Together, the Bible says that we can make a change. I love you. I appreciate you. Brian, thank you for joining me today. I want you to join me right now in the Mondo Insiders. I got to go. But remember this, keep the faith. It's going to be all right. I invite you to become a part of the Mondo Insider, a part of my inner circle. You know, as an insider, you'll get behind the scenes conversations with my special guests as they share insights on today's headlines and go deeper and have a deeper connection where you get to ask the questions and connect by going beyond the TV screen. I'm praying for 300 hearts to say yes. It's your partnership that helps me continue sharing these life-changing stories and amplifying the voices that sit on this orange couch that need to be heard. I'm asking you to join me as a monthly supporter of The Mondo Show. I want you to visit my website, themondoshow.com, to learn more on how to become a Mondo Insider today. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for praying for me. And I know that together we're going to be able to change the world for Christ. I love you. I love you so much for caring.